You're about to go on a small walk in the shape of a figure of eight around the Los Pedregales recreational area. On the walk, you will learn about aspects of the past and the present of this finca and of the Valley of El Palmar, where the finca is located. The walk is approximately 850 meters long, with an elevation gain of about 60 meters and an elevation loss of about 60 meters. The path is uneven in certain sections, and there are a few steps. However, the first 60 meters of the route is adapted for people with reduced mobility or wheelchair users who may learn about the main features of this place on the first four stops. The time it will take you to complete this walk, including all eight stops on this audio guide, will be about 45 to 50 minutes. To fully enjoy these walks and to respect the other users of this finca and to collaborate in its conservation, we kindly ask you to follow the signposted route and to keep the property free of litter. Take particular care when crossing the road. The staff of Los Pedregales are at your disposal if you require help or if you have any suggestions to make. You are about to listen to stop number one. Stop number one. Stop number one. The Valley of El Palmar is in the heart of Tenno Rural Park on the northwest of the island of Tenerife. This rural park is part of the Canary Islands network of protected natural spaces and also of the European Natura 2000 network. It serves two functions: to conserve the natural and cultural heritage and to improve the lives of the people that live in the hamlets, who are the living guardians of our shared traditions. The origin of the name of the Valley of El Palmar is unknown, but it may well derive from the palm groves that probably grew in the lower reaches of the valley. The very first settlers, the Guanches, had already transformed the natural landscape, but after the conquest of the island by the Crown of Castile at the end of the 15th century, large swathes of the island became farmland and pastures. Most of the land in this valley belonged to families of good social and economic standing who didn't live here but in La Laguna and other towns on the island of Tenerife. Here, as on the rest of the island, the land was farmed by tenant farmers or medianeros, poor families who worked from dawn to dusk in exchange for half of what they produced, which was barely enough to survive. Los Pedregales, where you are now standing, is a public property today, but it was once one of the private farms in the Valley of El Palmar. It belonged to the Osuna and Benitez de Lugo families. The main crop grown on Los Pedregales was wheat, but potatoes, vineyards, vegetables, fodder for the animals and fruit trees were also grown. The last tenant farmer of Los Pedregales was Domingo Romero, who is now retired and still lives locally. In his company, we will discover how he lived here barely 50 years ago. Through his anecdotes and his experiences, we will learn how difficult daily life was, but we will also learn the values of a society based on the principle of neighbourly cooperation. A society and people who, although they had little, knew how to enjoy life and were always ready for a fiesta, a dance, or a shared harvest to laugh, swap stories, and have fun.
I was born in the houses in the lower part of this farm in 1936. I like to say that the cows gave birth to me because I grew up here, and from a very young age I worked carrying out many different tasks in the fields until I got married and moved away. Life has changed a lot. Imagine, my house is now the office of the rural park. But let me introduce myself. My name is Domingo Romero, and I have spent most of my life in this valley, although as a child I would walk down to La Caleta, down on the coast, to take fruit and eggs to the house of the master, Don Luis, who was the owner of our land. I was the son of the medianeros, the tenant farmer, and being a medianero meant many things. Come with me, and I'll tell you all about it.
Stop number one ends here. Press pause and go to stop number two, following the signs. Once there, continue listening. Stop number two. From this point on the hillside, you can see the entire valley of El Palmar. In the mountains of Teno, there are few wide valleys like this. Rather, there are many narrow ravines. For that reason, this area was very good farmland in the past, and even today, there are still fields being tilled in the valley. The valley of El Palmar forms a wide semicircle, and its slopes have been terraced, like the steps of a great amphitheatre, to make it suitable for cultivation. A long time ago, thousands of years ago, this fertile valley, due to its orientation and altitude, would have been populated in its lower reaches by thermophilic forest. This is a type of forest of Mediterranean origin, consisting of palm trees, dragon trees, almosigos, sabinas, and many other species that thrive in the mild temperatures and the sun. Above the forest, on the upper heights of the slopes and under the influence of the sea of clouds, grew the laura silva, another type of forest that is a true living fossil. Dating back to about 20 million years ago, laura silva forests once populated the entire Mediterranean. The thermophilic forest, which grew in the lower parts of the valley, was the ecosystem that suffered most from the presence of humans in the Canary Islands, as it grew in areas with good weather all year round and where there were springs and water channels. This was where the Guanches first and the European settlers later mainly made their homes. The forests were cut down and the land was broken up to become pastures and farmland. The slopes were terraced to create level ground, and the thermophilic forest practically disappeared, and little by little, century after century, the laura silva forest also disappeared, clinging on only in the most inaccessible places. The hunger for farmland completely transformed the landscape of the islands, and the valley of El Palmar was no exception.
When I was young, this was all farmed. It was a great sight, but it was also a lot of work. Many people lived in the valley, and we planted every last possible bit, apart from those rocky outcrops where it was impossible to grow anything. Do you see the forest in the upper parts of the valley? That is Monte del Agua and Los Pasos. When I was young, the forest grew much higher up because we cut it down for firewood for cooking. After the war, people went hungry, and the forest was the only resource. Even the roots of the trees were pulled up and turned into charcoal. Now there is more forest, and it's growing much further down the slopes. And many fields have been abandoned and are now full of grass. But back then, if we didn't plant them, we wouldn't eat.
Stop number two ends here. Press pause and go to the next stop. You will have to walk back up the same path and go past stop number one to get to stop number three. Once there, continue listening. Stop number three.
I don't know why this valley is called El Palmar. I don't remember seeing many palm trees here. There were some in front of several houses, but there was never a palm grove here. That must have been centuries ago. When I was young, as well as the wheat and potato fields, we had peach trees, pear trees, fig trees, prickly pear catkus. Everything had to have a use if we wanted to get by. About 650 of us lived in the valley, and we ate what we harvested. Most of us were tenant farmers, which meant that the valley had to produce twice what we needed to eat, because half of our crops went to our masters. So we could hardly leave room for trees that were not fruit trees.
The The palm trees that grow around you have been planted recently, but they show us what the vegetation on the bottom of this valley may have looked like before it was transformed into farmland. Of that valley of farms, where every last inch was cultivated, today hardly any of it is still farmed. Times have changed, agriculture is in decline, and fewer people live in the valley. With so much abandoned land, plants are now colonising the valley once again, but now it is other species that are regaining a foothold. Tabaiba, Tainasta, Incensio and other plants from lower zones have grown here without competition, occupying uncultivated lands alongside other introduced species, such as prickly pear cactus and agave americana. Heather and fern from the uplands have also established a foothold. What we have here today is somewhat like a great cosmopolitan city, in which most of the inhabitants come from other places, and few are actually from the city. This is known as plant succession. For different reasons, plants colonize a territory that was once the domain of other types of vegetation. And growing alongside these plants, there are still some fruit trees, such as almond trees, which bear witness to the agricultural past. The Island Council of Tenerife has also planted thermophilic species on the farm. These are the plants that once grew in the areas blessed with good weather and which were so devastated by the human appetite for land. In addition to the palm trees, other examples of thermophilic species that grow on the farm are the sabina, the almacigo, the peralillo, and many more. If you wish to find out more about these plants, please take a look at their information panels. Stop number 3 ends here. Press pause and go to stop number 4. Once there, continue listening. Stop number 4.
Do you see that bench there? There are several of them on the farm. I don't remember when they were built. They were already there when I was a kid. But the first time I sat on one of these benches was after I retired. I didn't have time to sit down. There were always so many things to do. The bench was for the master and his family, who came here in summer and sat down to contemplate the farm, because we took such good care of it and it was nice to look at. For us Medianeros, the benches were more of a nuisance, because they were in the middle of the fields that we had to sow, plough, and harvest. When I was only 8 years old, I came here to help the oxen with the ploughing. I had to lift the plough handle with my shoulder because I wasn't strong enough to lift it with my hand. The benches were already here and got in the way of the teams of oxen when ploughing the fields.
The history of this farm goes back many centuries. After the conquest of Tenerife, the island was divided into large estates that were granted by the crown to the families of the conquerors, to those who had helped to finance the conquest, and to the church. With the passing of time, and after the Spanish confiscation, when the government seized and sold off church property, the land changed hands, generally ending up in the hands of wealthy families in La Laguna, the former capital of the island, or other cities such as Garachico and La Orotava. The estates of the Valley of El Palmar were owned by some of these families, such as the Benitez de Lugo or the Osuna families. Those who worked the land were locals, mostly tenant farmers. The owner supplied the land and half the seed, and in return he received half of what was produced, wheat, eggs, meat, fruit, in addition to the tithe, which was 10% of the tenant farmer's half, and sometimes other services too. The landowners came to visit from time to time, especially during the summer, in hunting season. They stayed in one of the large houses in the Valley of El Palmar and walked around the farm to supervise the work and to contemplate the landscape. After the 1940s, more profitable agricultural methods were developed on the coast, which centred on the production of bananas and tomatoes for export. The inland farms, ran by tenant farmers, became much less useful to their owners. The fact that tenant farmers were still working on the Los Pedregales farm in the 1970s speaks not so much to the agricultural potential of the valley, but to the lack of opportunities available to these farmers, who continued to work despite the harsh conditions. But it was during these decades that local communities gradually broke with their former landlords and sought new ways of subsisting through new working relationships as paid workers. Then in the 1970s, Los Pedregales ceased to be a farm and soon after became a publicly owned property. The houses at the bottom where Domingo Romero and other tenant farmers once lived now house the park management office and the visitor centre. These lands, so heavily exploited less than a century ago, now house public facilities for outdoor leisure pursuits. Times change, and farmers and herders have been replaced by hikers who walk the trails of the Tenno Massif to discover its natural and cultural values, or by people who, for just a few hours, escape from the city in search of places where they can disconnect and enjoy nature. Stop number four ends here. This is the last stop of the accessible section of the walk. If you wish to continue, press pause and go to stop number five. Once there, continue listening. Stop number five. From here, you can see how the scrub climbs up the hillside, colonizing the abandoned farmland once again. The most common species, with the greatest capacity for colonization, is Tabaiba, which is almost tree-like here. In their natural habitat, closer to the coast, tabaibas and other shrubs are smaller, since there they do not receive as much water and nutrients as they do here. But if you look up at the high part of the valley slopes, the Lara Silva forest growing on the summits is also beginning to descend, returning to occupy what were its domains before it was all cut down. Now the faya, heather and laurel compete with other trees, such as pine and eucalyptus, which were planted in the past for their wood. If you came back here in 100 years and agriculture and livestock had completely disappeared, you would probably find that nature has taken back control, and you would find a Lara Silva forest growing in those areas where there are more or less constant clouds. And lower down, where the management office now stands, the thermophilic plants would also have repopulated their territory. Today in Los Pedregales, small forests of thermophilic trees have been planted, Sabina, Almasigo, Peralillo, amongst others. As we have seen, they were the species that most suffered under human occupation and, at present, only very few naturally occurring, isolated individuals still grow. But these forests are like seed capsules, like a life insurance, which hint at a new future for these species.
Things have changed a lot. I never thought that I would see all these fields abandoned. In the past, we had to farm every single one just to survive. Who would ever have guessed that people would come to the finca for a barbecue and a walk? Life has made a 180-degree turn. But there are still things around here that speak of the past. Just look at the stone walls that held the terraces. They are so well made that they're still standing today. And look at all the large stones scattered throughout the fields. They used to give us so much strife. How many ploughs did they break? The oxen pulled the plough so hard that it broke when it ran over one of those stones hidden underground. That's why this farm is called Los Pedregales, because the Spanish word for stone is piedra. As you continue on your walk, how many of these big stones can you see lying around?
Stop number five ends here. Press pause and go to stop number six. Once there, continue listening. Stop number six.
My mother went up all those paths twice every day to milk the goats and to move them so they could continue grazing. The milk was creamier in the morning and was for making cheese, and the afternoon milk was for domestic use. And my mother always took advantage of the journey up to bring back down a bundle of firewood on her head from the little heather that still survived at the top of the slope. I also went up nearly every day to bring down grass for the cows, or to plant, or to bring in the harvest. When we brought in the wheat harvest, we would come down here laden with sheaves of wheat over our shoulders, without ever stopping on the way down. They said that if you brought it down by donkey, the wheat would shed its grain more, which meant much more of it was lost, and we couldn't afford to lose even a single grain. When I worked as a medianero, I didn't have much time to look at the view. But now that I do have the time, I have to admit that the Valley of El Palmar is beautiful, don't you think?
From up here, the wide open panoramic view reveals certain clues as to how the valley was formed. We have to go back millions of years in time. More than 7 million years ago, what is now the Teno Massif began to emerge from the depths of the ocean, eruption after eruption. It was once even larger than it is today. But when the eruptions began to subside, the wind and the rain eroded the volcanic edifice, leaving rocky outcrops and deep ravines behind. But in the case of this valley, the terrain is not steep and rugged, but a smooth depression. This was probably caused by a landslide, a common phenomenon in volcanic territories like the Canary Islands. But just 150,000 years ago, a new eruption took place in the centre of the valley. The mountain of El Palmar, in spite of its humble appearance, spilled out lava that reached all the way down to the sea. Notice how deep slices have been carved out of its slopes. These are quarries of picon, or volcanic lapilli, small fragments of lava that were used for the construction of buildings between 1960 and 1980. The vertical sides of these quarries collapsed more than once, causing small avalanches that were often fatal. Paradoxically, this volcano, even though it has taken some lives, is also responsible for the great fertility of the valley. It emerged in a part of the valley that blocked water from flowing down the ravines. This enabled the water and the fertile soil that descended from the upper slopes to accumulate. Because of the richness of the moist soil and ease of access, the best land was at the bottom of the valley. But the upper slopes where we now stand also had to be farmed. The path now descends again, and during the descent you will cross several old terraced fields with large stone walls that transform the slope into flat areas. Today they are used for camping and picnics, but you can still imagine what it took to build them and to produce enough food from them to survive. Stop number 6 ends here. Press pause and go to the next stop. Take special care because a little further down you will cross the road that goes to Teno Alto. Once you reach stop number 7, continue listening. Stop number 7. You are in the middle of a recent plantation of sabina, a type of juniper tree that is endemic to the Canary Islands. This means that this plant does not occur naturally in any other place on the planet. This tree is suited to the hours of sunshine, the scarce water, and the relatively infertile soils of the mid-level south-facing slopes of the islands. Its wood was highly prized as firewood, and the need for fuel in the past almost led to its total extinction. Today, fortunately, things have begun to change, and there have been some efforts to rescue the species. The bark of the sabina has a peculiar texture, and its leaves and fruits have a characteristic aroma. Go ahead, use all your senses to discover this tree that we are fortunate enough today to be able to enjoy. The sabina is one of the thermophilic trees. Others include the dragon tree, palm tree, peralillo and almacigo. Almacigos are very unusual in the Canary Islands. They are deciduous trees, which means that they shed their leaves in the autumn. You can see a few almacigos further on. One is signposted to help you find it.
Well, these sabinas are beautiful. We didn't have them when I was young. Some still grew on the cliffs where we couldn't get to them to cut them down for their wood. Today, they grow here where before we planted wheat and potatoes. But I am very proud that these farm walls are still standing. When part of a wall fell down, we all got together to repair it. The master gave us some money to pay the extra workers because it was a lot of work for us alone, and we rebuilt the wall. These terraces have stopped fertile soil from being washed down the slope, and that's why this copse can grow here today.
Stop number 7 ends here. Press pause and go to stop number 8. Once there, continue listening. Stop number 8.
Oh, the Calleon de Tenno. How many times have I walked this old country lane? It was always full of people and donkeys, because it was the main route from El Palma to Tenno Alto. People used it to transport goods, but also to go to fiestas. When you are young, you have so much energy. I remember working all day in the summer, and going to the fiestas in Tenno Alto in the evening. They organized such good fiestas. I danced all night and came back home at dawn and collected grass for the cows at sunrise. This lane was very well tended. If we saw a stone out of place, we would put it right, and there was not a single blade of grass. The donkeys saw to that by eating any shoots that grew. That's why the lane has such high walls, so that the donkeys and goats couldn't eat the crops that grew on both sides. I used to be able to race up to the top in a few strides. Now I get tired much more easily. I've been around the block a few times, and I've seen so many changes in Los Pedregales. I'm going to sit down on this stone to rest a while. But you carry on. The recreational area is just up ahead. I've really enjoyed our time together, telling you about my life on Los Pedregales. See you around.
The valley has changed over time. What you see now is nothing more than a single frame from a film that has been running for over 7 million years old and that has not yet finished. Everything is changing, like this country lane, known as Callejón de Tenno. It was most probably originally a path used by Guanche families to take their flocks up to the plateau of Tenno Alto, and then it became a thoroughfare more suited to modern uses. The Callejón bore the constant to-ing and fro-ing of people who travelled with laden donkeys between El Palmar and Tenno Alto. It was a highway communicating hundreds of people who transported livestock and goods on a daily basis. The road, which was built in the 1970s, turned this old byway into a remnant of the past, and for decades it lay neglected and forgotten. But the future had a surprise in store for it. Today, the growing popularity of hiking and the efforts made by the rural park management have led to its regeneration. Hiking boots and walking sticks have replaced the clip-clop of donkeys' hooves and the cries of the muleteer. Rural tourism has revitalized not only the old byways, but also local Tenno products, such as wine, cheese, honey, saffron, or handicrafts. Acquiring these products is one way that you can help preserve this landscape. As you walk along this last section of the route, along the Callejón del Teno, the stones lining the lane will whisper echoes of times gone by, when people worked from dusk till dawn to feed themselves, but when there was always time to let your hair down and enjoy life. Last stop ends here. Thank you for listening. The Teno Rural Park team welcome your suggestions and comments.